Hello and welcome to a Brave Space podcast with Dr. Meeks. I'm your host, Chelsea Glasgow. And of course, we're here with the wonderful Dr. Meeks. How are you today?
I'm very well. How are you?
Wonderful. Especially great because today we have two of our very own interns at the Center for Racial Healing here with us, Chris and Aaliyah. How you guys doing?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm so glad that you guys are here. Listen, I want our viewers to be able to hear exactly from you, who you are, and why you're at the center.
My name is Chris Isidoro Saldivar. I am an intern here. I do all the audiovisual work, the social media content, and I also make sure to host the programs that we have on our Facebook Live, on our YouTube Live. I am a Clark Atlanta student. I'm a rising senior. I am originally from San Diego, and I've been in Atlanta for a year now. So I've been enjoying it ever since, and I'm happy to be a part of the center. It really aligns to my goals and, you know, what I firmly believe in. So I'm really happy to be here today.
Chris, we are so happy to have you. What about you, Aaliyah?
My name is Aaliyah Simmons. I'm from Macon, Georgia. I'm here as a Bishop Barbara Harris Scholar, where I am an intern at the center. I'm 18. I'm a current student at Georgia State University, where I am majoring in journalism. And I am the Boys and Girls Club of Georgia's Youth of the Year, which is how Dr. Meeks found me. She kind of found me and took me under her wings and told me that I was going to come with her and she was going to help me along the way.
Yes. And you've been here ever since. And we are so glad to have you both. You guys truly enrich what we're doing here at the center, especially for our intergenerational conversations. You all's input is priceless. And so, again, we're so grateful to have you. The reason why we wanted you to come on our podcast show today was to really discuss our topic that we've been discussing the whole entire year, which is overcoming racialized trauma. All right. Of course, we've had conversations around the office about what racial trauma looks like, but we want our listeners to hear what overcoming racial trauma looks like to a millennial like Chris or to a Generation Zer like Aaliyah. So I'm going to open it up with this first question. What does racial trauma mean to you when you first hear the word?
When I hear racial trauma, I just think of the past. I just think of the things that my race and my family members have experienced throughout these years or throughout our lifetimes and how they affect us now today. When I think about trauma in my life specifically, I think about some of the hardships that my family and I have went through and how we overcame it. But specifically, I really don't know a lot about how to heal that trauma.
Okay, we're going to get into that. What about you, Chris? What comes to mind when you think about racialized trauma?
For me, in my personal experience, I would say it would be knowing how to advocate for yourself. Mm-hmm. I come from a predominantly Latino-raised household, and one thing that I didn't notice until I became older was that my parents, they just did what they were supposed to do. You know, they wanted to do the right thing and always just get by, and it was enough for them. And now when I got older, I kind of realized that there's more to it than that. You don't have to just feel okay or just make it by in order to live a certain way. I feel like I'm here to kind of overcome that trauma, that like there's more than just being like enough or just making it by. We ought to feel like comfortable doing everything that we want to do. And I think this is something that I've been able to learn along the way in these past couple of years, you know, being as an adult and mm-hmm. being in higher education spaces. Full disclosure, I am not just a a millennial. I am like on the cusp of Gen Z, so it feels really weird, you know, like I'm an adult, but I really don't feel like an adult. And, you know, I want to be responsible adult, but sometimes I feel like I'm just getting by. So it's almost kind of like some of that stuff that my parents lived through, I feel it as well. And I feel like it's my job to kind of understand that and find a resolution for being able to conquer that trauma that we all live in some sort of way.
Yeah, I love that. And I love what you're saying. You know, although it sounds like you respect and love your parents and adore them for getting you this far, right? But at the same time, you want to take it a step further. And that's really what this conversation is about. For number one, us to recognize where we are, what we came from. And number two, to recognize, okay, and how do we heal from this? Dr. Meeks, based on our millennial cusp Generation Z, our Generation Zers, what do you believe our youth need to hear when it comes to the topic of overcoming racial trauma? What needs to come to their mind when they think about the topic?
Well, first of all, I want to say how much it warms my heart to hear these young voices saying, Aaliyah saying, I don't quite know what to do about overcoming this, and then to hear Chris voice the sense of hope and the capacity to heal and go beyond his family. I think that one of the best gifts that we elders, and I'm definitely an elder because I'm probably as old as all of the three of you together. One of the best gifts we can give to you is to help you be grounded in hope. Because when people have no hope, they become dangerous. And we see a lot of that as the young suicide rate rises among young people, which causes me great grief, and particularly young people of color. Because it says that you don't feel like tomorrow's worth waiting for. So I think that one of the most important things we can do is help the generations younger than us, behind us, as the elders, we need to be willing to tell the historical truth, and then to be there as a support as they process it and work on finding ways toward healing.
When you donate, you support our mission to provide tools and experiences that allow our community to engage in dismantling racism through education, prayer, dialogue, pilgrimage, and spiritual formation. Donate today at thecenterforracialhealing.org.
Cuando tú donas, apoyas a nuestra misión de brindar herramientas y experiencias que permitan a nuestra comunidad participar en el desmantelamiento de racismo a través de la educación, la oración, el diálogo, la peregrinación y la formación espiritual. Dona hoy en centerforracialhealing.org.
So much of the time we'll say things like, the young people don't want to hear this because it's old stuff and they want to go forward and kind of forget, be forgetful. You can't be forgetful and be well. You have to factor in all of the parts of your life in order to be a well person. Mm-hmm. And I think that being able to bear witness to that is important, both verbally and both by the way in which we live. Mm-hmm. So we elders need to be interrogating that history and making sure we're working on our own healing, because we need to have something to model. And I think a part of one of the big deficits right now, particularly in communities of color, is that we're confused about that some. And that concerns me greatly.
Yeah, that gap of information works against us, mm-hmm. which makes me curious to ask you guys, you know, have you ever had these conversations about racism, whether it's happened to you or a family member? Have these conversations ever come up in your homes? Where was the first time that you kind of learned about racism or experienced it? where are the places that you go to learn about it or talk about it? And that was a triple question right there. So I guess what we can start with is, do you have these intergenerational conversations?
I know me personally, I have not. Mm-hmm. Not with anyone in my family, my household. Like Dr. Meek said, I think that a lot of us, especially as Black people, we have the idea that, oh, we have to keep moving. We have to keep going with life. We have to forget about our past mm-hmm. and keep just, you know, keep this mm-hmm. straight face or this happy face and not mm-hmm. acknowledge the things that we've been through. And I think that that's mm-hmm. the problem. Yeah.
Absolutely. There's nothing worse than dragging a bunch of stuff behind you that you don't want to investigate. And so you live in the fear that it's going to overcome you. And so healing requires you to open up that sack and look in it and bring it up to the light and to the air so that it can become an energizing force rather than something that de-energizes. And I that's part of why the center does what it does. And that's why I'm so thrilled to have all of you there. And I hope we can enlarge these conversations, because until we do that, we're just going to keep on kind of repeating the past.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Chris, Dr. Meek said repeating the past. From what you know, that has happened in history, do you see a pattern amongst your peers where people are repeating the past? Or do you see that people are, you know, doing something different?
Back when I was in community college, and I went to San Diego City College before I got to Clark Atlanta, and my history class, my history requirement, I was able to choose U.S. history with a Chicano perspective.
Wait, we have to go back. How do you identify? Afro-Latinx?
That's one way to put it. So I'm Afro-Mexican, but I was raised predominantly Mexican
okay.
in my household. And
cool.
Yeah, like there was always like a part of me that there, like I felt like I struggled to find my identity growing up. And now I feel really comfortable like who I am and knowing, you know, how I can identify myself in public. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. before that, like it was when I got to community college through these history classes that I took, where I realized, you know, who I was and what I wanted to do, like what approach I wanted to take, you know, after learning about my identity. And it was through those classes, my history class through a Chicano perspective, which is now, it's been updated now, so it's like Chicano, Chicana, Chicanx studies. Mm. And
what's Chicano, Chicana? Just help us to understand. Chicano, Chicanx, what does that mean?
Well, for me, like, well, it's based on pretty much whoever you're asking. Okay. For me, like, I would just say Chicano, you know, because like I identify as a male, heterosexual person. So I would just say Chicano, and like, I'm used to
okay.
it.
Okay.
I'm sure in some cases, some people would identify as like Chicanx because it's like non-binary. But for me, yeah, Chicano.
Okay.
And the biggest thing that I really like took out of this class was that that people, you know, when they were like I don't remember the exact date, but definitely in the 20th century, somewhere in there. So I came from San Diego, and the biggest like story that like stuck out to me the most was about this park. It's called Chicano Park, and it was built under the Coronado Bridge, which is like a highway to cross over into like another part of San Diego. And this park was like built like close to like a landfill and like government property, where they built these, for a lack of a better term, ships.
Okay.
Government ships. And the city, they wanted to take back this land and turn it into a border patrol highway station, something along those that something along that. And people, you know, who live there were just furious, and because like this land was given to, like, was finally, you know, they had a place for them to feel comfortable in doing the things that was normal to them, you know, a park, a space for them to just congregate. And this was going to be like just taken away, like turned into something they didn't want to. And it took many, many just months. I'm not sure how long, it could have been more than a year, but they pretty much advocated for themselves, and they always protested like day after day to be able to hold down onto this space. And long story short, they fought for what they wanted, and you know, they've kept their park from being demolished and turned into something they didn't want to, and now it's a historical landmark, Chicano Park. And that like really, really like put into perspective like what I wanted to do in my life. And it was like to advocate for myself, and I feel comfortable doing that, but now advocating for others who may not understand that like your voice is powerful, and even being at an age that is, I guess, fairly young, or even just being in higher education, being able to be in those spaces is a privilege, but it's also a certain power that you have. And that's kind of what the approach I'm taking now after learning all this stuff from my community college experience in San Diego. I want to continue bringing that at Clark Atlanta, and just being able to advocate for others, and being able to create a platform for people to be comfortable talking about their experiences, and maybe even finding resolution for them to being able to be comfortable
telling their stories. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, you know, and the thing that I love about Chris is that you do that through the visual arts, you do that through photography and videography, because there are multiple ways to contribute to racial healing. One of the things that you identified was, that I thought was very key, was the identity that you were able to find. Do you think, Aaliyah, that, you know, people in your age group have an identity? And if so, where's that identity built from? If we're not having these intergenerational conversations, if they're not being built on history, what do you think people are sourcing their identity from? And then we're going to go over to Dr. Meeks just to give us a closeout as far as how can we seek to be a tad bit more braver in finding our identity, staying there, and then growing and healing. So go ahead, Aaliyah, and then Dr. Meeks.
The answer is no. I don't think that my peers and I do, or I don't think it's easy for my peers and I to understand what our identity are. I know personally me, growing up in a predominantly Black neighborhood and going to a predominantly Black school, I still struggled with identity. I was surrounded by people who looked like me, but I still felt like I didn't fit in because I had different aspirations. I was one of those kids that was on like YouTube all the time watching DIY videos and stuff like that. And that wasn't something that I relate to in my class. So I would go on social media and see and watch people who look completely different, like white girls who had straight hair. And then I would go to school and see a completely opposite thing. And so it caused me to be confused about who I was, and be confused about how I can be comfortable within myself. I too come from a mixed background. My father, he's mixed. So my siblings, they're all light skinned with curly hair. And so that caused trauma as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that this goes back to racism. We have this kind of like beauty standard that is based around what, you know, European people of European descent made. Mm-hmm. And so that caused me to be, I don't know how to explain it. It just caused me to have a lot of,
sounds like confusion.
Confusion, yes.
Sounds like, you know, you were looking and you were seeing white girls be beautiful. And you're like, mm-hmm. okay, well, that's beauty, but I'm beautiful too, but I don't look like that, right?
And that came with age. Mm-hmm. And it came with educating myself I love TikTok. So okay, it came with being on TikTok. It came on. It came with just watching a lot of educated Black people, a lot of with the natural hair culture, and just seeing a lot of people who look just like me be confident within themselves and say, just like Chris says, I am who I am, and I'm going to advocate for myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I just love hearing it. Somebody 18 years old talking about something came with age.
Yes. Because it did. Oh, it's so wonderful.
So Chris and Aaliyah, you know, you all make me want to cry because I'm so thrilled, number one, to have you all be a part of our center. And Chelsea, I'm just thinking of 10 other things we need to do with them going forward. This whole business of first of all, just being open to asking questions, you know, to interrogate the status quo, to look at yourself and to be willing to be disturbed. You both of you have allowed yourselves to be disturbed by the difference between how you were feeling and what you were seeing, and how you were thinking and what people were saying. I think that's a critical piece of being able to open yourself up to truth that can help set you free. And then again, we have a responsibility. The elders have a responsibility to make sure that the generations behind us understand the legacy of struggle, the legacy of resilience, and the legacy of hope. And if we haven't done that, we failed you. And we have failed as a community of as communities of color. We have failed the generations behind us by not being willing to stand up and do that, by being so quick to want to leave whatever is associated with us to mimic white culture so we can be acceptable. And I think we're paying a price for that. And that's part of why the Center for Racial Healing is even in existence. We're trying to mitigate against some of that. So I am thrilled to have young people around us and a part of us and young people like yourselves that are willing to ask those questions and willing to believe that things can be different and want them to be different. And I'm so excited about the possibilities as we go forward here. With both of you and with many others, because you will be, I think, leaders for us in helping us to enter into conversations with more folks from your age groups.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, this conversation has just been invigorating and exciting so that we can see the future, you know? And it's just very exciting and refreshing to know that our youth, that we are all on one accord as far as advocating for ourselves, recognizing that we need healing, and also doing what needs to be done. If that means asking the questions to bridge the gap, then that's what we'll do. So I just want all of our listeners out there to hear the charge for today. If you are an elder, as Dr. Meeks has said, the responsibility to share the legacy and to tell the truth so that our history does not go unnamed, unnoticed, or forgotten. And if you are a millennial or Generation Z or, you know, I don't know the next generation after that, but if you are a youth or a young adult, it is still your responsibility to go back and retrieve the information for you to bridge the gap. Sometimes it requires us to ask the questions, to start the conversation, and it begins with that inquiry. If we want to bridge this intergenerational gap, if we want to heal ourselves, our families, and our cultures, it is going to take everybody asking questions, answering questions, and being brave enough to tell the truth.
Want to hear more? If so, sign up for our weekly newsletter and check our website for upcoming programs at centerforracialhealing.org. Also, connect with us online and on all of our social media platforms at Center for Racial Healing.
¿Quieres escuchar más? Escríbete a nuestro boletín semanal y visita nuestra página de web para buscar los próximos programas en centerforracialhealing.org. Conéctate con nosotros y síguenos en nuestras redes sociales @centerforracialhealing.